Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guests. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast.
Welcome to another edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. I'm DJ Impact. I got a couple of the bad boys here with me. Sin City Steve, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're great. Matt Michaels, how are you?
Observing a little wrestling.
You observing?
A little wrestling.
A little wrestling. Okay. We'll find out what you're talking about in a minute. We do have a special guest with us. You've heard him on WrestlingObserver.com and also Wrestling Observer Live on Saturday, which he hosts. Also, the Pacific Rim Podcast and the Best Trip Ever Travel Podcast. With us, we have Jim Valley. How you doing, Jim?
Good, Brad. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate you guys having me on the show.
No problem.
So, Jim, my first question is, AEW has just recently run their first pay-per-view. Did it hit the mark, or did it leave a little left to be desired?
You know, because AEW is so new, I really hate to rush to judgment.
Right.
I think that going forward, we'll tell the tale on this. I could say what I liked and what I didn't like, and I think that's a different conversation
right.
as far as what the results be. I mean, if the audience liked it, and they did a great buy rate, and they do great buy rates for pay-per-views at $50 a pop and in the future, then it was absolutely great. If we see the audience continue to erode, we see buy rates erode, attendance maybe dwindle, then perhaps they need to take another look at their philosophy and what's working and not working. Some people always complain, oh, wrestling analysis, you guys are so hard on WWE and it's so easy, you AEW apologists. But we're at different stages in the relationship
yeah.
with AEW and WWE. You know, it's like first dating. Oh, it's so cute how you left the seat up. Or, oh, you took so much room on the makeup counter. That's awesome. And then those things just get on your freaking nerves. We're really still in a honeymoon phase with AEW. And I think, to be fair, you got to give it some time and kind of see where things go.
So we're at the stage of Cody left the seat up. It's kind of still cute.
It's adorable. You have food in your teeth. I love that.
And you know, you brought up one thing that I really am very curious about what's going to happen, and that's the price of the pay-per-view. In this day and age, especially because I know that there are certain bad boys who I know for a fact did not pay the $50 but saw the pay-per-view still regardless.
Hey, we're all law-abiding citizens, okay?
Yeah, right. But you're cheap motherfuckers. That's what it comes down to. So do you think that in the end that the fact that there is, you know, just like any other, you know, if WWE itself didn't have the network and people were finding a way to see the product without paying, do you think 50 might be out of the range for someone, you know, who has disposable income, but at this point that just might be a little too much?
That's a valid point and a valid question. You know, one of my callers recently on Wrestling Observer Live brought up a great point where, you know, AEW keeping at that price point, they're less likely to give you a crappy finish like Hell in the Cell with Seth Rollins and The Fiend. And Dave Meltzer, years ago when we got the network, called it that pay-per-views are going to be even more disposable as far as finishes and as far as satisfying endings. And what my caller brought up was, I think it was Tim from Miami, what he brought up was, at the $50, is AEW going to demonstrate that they are not going to give you just transitional and cheap outs each and every time you throw down your money? And regardless of what you thought of the pay-per-view or any of the matches at Full Gear, you can't say that they didn't put forth an effort.
Right.
They absolutely did. I think they made a wholehearted attempt to own that $50 and to show you that they value your investment in the product. Is that enough for you? I don't know. Another thing I've mentioned before is you mentioned my wife's travel podcast that we do, The Best Trip Ever. She's a superstar in the travel industry, and she's a tremendous salesperson. And one of the things that she tries to reiterate with other people who she's mentoring or working with, don't sell to your own wallet.
Yeah.
I think you bring up a valid point with the price point, but at the same time, look at, you go to somewhere, say like Rodeo Drive, or I just got back from Dubai, and some of these things are ridiculously overpriced. But people see that as a status symbol sometimes.
Right.
So perhaps, maybe, is AEW knowingly or unknowingly trying to position itself as some sort of premium brand? Premium wrestling seems a little odd, but okay. It's worked everywhere else. Does it work here? I guess that's another thing we're going to find out, or will, in this day and age, will people just find an illegal stream?
You know, it would be interesting, and this is something that, as you were talking, just kind of formulated with that concept, and that is, wouldn't it be kind of cool if, instead of just putting out the, let's say, the $50 for the pay-per-view itself, since they have this Hot Topic deal, buy two t-shirts at Hot Topic and get a code for the pay-per-view. At least you're getting something, you know, that you can also now be wearing and marketing the brand, as well as getting to see the pay-per-view for the same $50.
Yeah, I mean, if you're making more money on the t-shirts, then why not? I guess it would depend on what's the cut of the t-shirt versus the cut of the pay-per-view. And with, if they've got cable partners, would the cable partners want that?
Right.
It might be something to look into as far as maybe in the future with marketing, but they probably also have a lot of masters to answer to.
Yeah,
without a doubt, man. And so I want to go back to something that you had mentioned on one of your many podcasts that you run. You had mentioned that AEW doesn't send out the vibe that we're in charge and you better listen to us. They send out the vibe that we love wrestling. It seems like Vince McMahon has adopted this thing from the Crockett's, where they seem ashamed of themselves, ashamed of what they are. Cody Rhodes is not trying to be anyone other than who he is. He sees a market and he's going for it. I think that sums up my feeling exactly when it comes to the relationship with AEW and the fans versus WWE and the fans. So would you like to expand upon that maybe, and just give us your thoughts if anything has been pushed stronger in one direction, especially after the Full Gear pay-per-view?
It's insane to me how much traction those comments got. I haven't been to the Observer all that long. I haven't been on Wrestling Observer Live all that long. It's a Saturday show. I check Reddit just to kind of keep up on everything, and I saw that I was the top topic, not only on Squared Circle, but this stupid thing made it all the way to, like, the third freaking page of Reddit. And
yeah.
I was like... Look, if I had known people were actually listening to this show, I would have rethought everything. Who? What? It was just insane that could happen. It was mind-boggling, but it touched a nerve, and that's awesome. People know. That's the thing. I don't have to tell you. Sometimes I talk about this. Like, the other night we were out with my wife and some of her friends in the travel industry, and they were, I always get questions about podcasts, and my wife wanted me to talk about all of them. I'm like, you kind of do a cost benefit analysis. Do I really want to have the wrestling conversation right now? And I didn't. Because people think that we're all stupid and we're all hicks and we're all white trash, which is not true. We are trash of every race, creed, and color. And I really wish that they would get that right. Pissing me off. Anyway, they think we're dumb. And the audience is not dumb. Mm-hmm. We see what Vince obviously has things that he wants us to pick up on, but we also, the other week I joked about the debut of Humberto Carrillo. I was like, oh, I really like this guy. I'm really going to miss him in 3 weeks when he disappears with no explanation.
Exactly, though.
And that hasn't happened yet, but... Yeah. You know, if he loses like a million times in a row, it still sends you a message, don't invest in this guy. There are messages that come across all the time, and it, you know, people pick up on that. People can see that, you know, yes, AEW is a business, but at the same time, they are proud to be in this business as opposed to, you know, it occurred to me years ago. I was at a SmackDown, or no, I was at a Raw taping at one of the peaks of Austin. This must have been like 99. Mm-hmm. And we were in Spokane, Washington. And it was so loud you couldn't hear anything, but you go back and you watch it on TV, and they never mentioned they're in Spokane. Yeah. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then I didn't pick up on it that if it's a smaller town, I don't even know if they still do this, but if it's a smaller market, they never mention the name. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're in Philadelphia or Las Vegas or somewhere glamorous, they mention it. But Vince has the shame. And I think the fans pick up on that. We're not dumb. We see these things, whether he means them to be there or not, and he has educated us, and that's why it's hard to judge AEW right now, because yeah, it's funny to say we're still in the honeymoon phase, and that's true, but we're also still in the education process. So we don't know, we haven't picked up on enough things to find out if these are trends or, you know, a core part of whatever their wrestling philosophy is. So, yeah, there's definitely a message, and, you know, Cody is right. You know, he talks about the South hasn't been served. Mm-hmm. Living up here in Seattle, you know, the diversity capital of the world, Seattle, Washington. You know, I mean, if Michael Hayes were to write a song about Seattle, it would be White Street, USA. I never had a problem with all the stuff in the South. Mm-hmm. Sure, I knew about all the jokes and, you know, incest or whatever. All this, everybody knows the jokes, but in real life, I was like, I didn't know how big of a city Charleston was or Greenville or anything. I just wanted to watch a show, but for some reason that's important to some people, and I never understood why, but I picked up on that. I mean, when they went to Chicago for Starrcade and all these things, and I think it's great that Cody's doing this and again, embracing who he is, and that's obviously a message that people like today, but it's a great business strategy.
So, along the lines of business strategies, what brought you into sharing your opinions of wrestling on podcasts?
Boy, what a terrible question. just awful timing on this one. You know why? Maybe you'll get the joke, but I figured it would be better to do wrestling than get involved in politics. And what a terrible time to make that decision. Good timing, Jim. Good timing.
Matt's good for one of those, at least a show. So.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It's just like, oh, yeah, this will be nice and siloed. I can just keep it in this little area of my life. And then politics just drops right in the middle of wrestling. Thank you, Saudi Arabia.
Seriously. It's you know, what's fascinating with that is between the fact that you're seeing, you know, all this and the, you know, the whole plane mess and, you know, everything that is being reported as truth or rumor or hearsay, and then you're seeing all the, I mean, it just, everything gets so more ridiculous as it builds. It's almost where I thought for a second, is this a work? Am I really being worked here?
Here's the thing, is that's not a bad attitude to have just in general.
Yeah.
Just in general, it's just, you always have to have that question with wrestlers and wrestling, and it's terrible, but probably wrestling is a big reason for why I'm so cynical. It's, but you have to ask that question. Otherwise, you know, you could look foolish either way, but I guess maybe you're a little bit smarter to be cynical. I don't know, but no, it's valid. It's completely valid because they've turned so many things into an angle.
Yeah. And then you know, unfortunately, you have someone like Dave, where if Dave says one thing, Now you've got half the internet believing what he's saying and half the internet not believing what he's saying. So it's almost like there's partisanship even over the comments of what is going on. And these are, you know, just non-political wrestling fans who now are, like, you know, giving so much heat to someone who's just trying to convey what he's hearing. It's amazing to me.
Well, I think it just comes down to one thing, that people are awful.
Yeah, that's true.
Pretty much.
No, I mean, we suck.
Yeah.
We suck. We do. We just move on to the next thing. I mean, every summer lineup at county fairs proves that. Has all of these people who had dreams of making hit records and being superstars forever have got to sing the same one-hit wonder for 30 years to carve out a career while people make fun of how older and fatter and balder they are. We suck. The public sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's you know, do you think that in some ways it becomes reflective when you have something like wrestling, which essentially is the easiest form of storytelling, bringing together athleticism with, you know, just human nature, you know, and telling these stories, making good guys, bad guys, making gray, you know, in the middle type feelings. It seems to reflect where society is a lot of times. And in this day and age, does it feel like almost that the bigger something like WrestleMania gets, that it's almost like watching the Romans have their, you know, just short of actual deaths, you're just getting all these, you know, this big, you know, hype and almost aggression of, you know, the people can take the views of what's going on in their life and then just kind of, you know, if it's through Twitter or through watching live or however it is, you know, get out that aggression.
You know, that would be more of an individual thing. It feels to me that, you know, if you're talking about, you know, picking black and white and vilifying one side and this side is the worst, I would say politics is a better form of wrestling than wrestling.
That's awesome. That's actually a great parallel, yeah.
That's the thing. It's like my wife, you know, she watches better TV. She'll watch like The Prophet and all these real estate shows and things where you can actually get some value and learn things, but she also watches The Housewives. And, you know, lately we've been watching, have you seen 90 Day Fiancé? Have you ever seen that show?
Oh my God. My wife loves that show. and it actually gets me watching it. And she's like a big fan of Caesar. Don't get me talking about it though, but yeah.
Oh, perfect. 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 Thank you.
Yeah.
Caesar. Okay, let's talk about Caesar very quickly.
Okay.
So Caesar is this pathetic guy who works in like a nail salon,
yes,
and makes like 50 cents a week. And somehow Caesar is sending thousands of dollars,
right,
to this very attractive blonde, mm-hmm, Eastern European woman.
Right.
And the storyline is that it's an obvious scam. And, yeah, if you go on Twitter, you see all these people going, oh, this is such a stupid storyline because it's just one person. She doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And they spent weeks building it up. So they do the blow-off,
right,
TV show, and the woman who we've never seen finally shows up.
Right.
So yeah, my point is that all of these fake reality shows in some ways do better fake wrestling stories than wrestling does.
Yeah.
And they let that play out, and they let even I was hooked. I was like,
yeah,
they must have trouble casting people if this is the storyline they chose.
Right.
That, gosh, they, because sometimes they have people come back, they have recurring characters, and I've had to do some producing, not like this, but where it's like, it's hard sometimes to get new people. So I was like, well, this is probably the best they can do. And then I fell for it as well, but that was the plan, yeah, all along, and that's genius. And I don't know that if any wrestling has ever stuck with anything that long where you're like, this is stupid, and boom, you get the payoff and you were the fish all along and, right, you didn't even know it.
That's amazing.
It is.
So obviously, we you had mentioned doing the travel podcast with your wife, and that she's a superstar in the travel industry. Where is your favorite trip that you've taken? What were the circumstances behind it? Where did you go? All that kind of fun stuff.
We just got back from Dubai again in Abu Dhabi.
Oh man!
And if you ever want to feel poor, please go to Dubai. And so we got to stay at the Burj Al Arab, the 7-star hotel where everything is gold plated, and it's ridiculous opulence. And then we also went to Abu Dhabi, and they have this incredible theme park there called Warner Brothers World. And because it's so hot, it's all indoors, so it's like, you know, a building the size of like 17 IKEAs or Costcos all together. And look it up. The theming is incredible. They've got a whole area based on the Justice League where it looks like Metropolis, and it's indoors. And they've got a Justice League building and a Daily Planet building. They've got a Gotham City that looks like the frickin' Batman Arkham. It's just, in all the rides are incredibly detailed and themed, and it's amazing. They've got a cartoon area that part of it looks like a Roadrunner cartoon. They've got Bedrock for the Flintstones. They've got a Splash Mountain-style ride that takes you through the world of the Flintstones.
Wow.
Just incredible. Oh, they've got a Scooby-Doo ride where you get in the haunted house like you see in Scooby-Doo, and the whole thing, it's sort of like the Haunted Mansion, but you're in a Scooby-Doo episode. It's incredible what they've done, and the theming is off the charts. It's probably my favorite theme park in the world right now, and I've been to every Disney park, so I loved that. We've got a video up at, you can find out, I think you search my name, Jim Valley, on YouTube, and I've got a whole bunch of best trip ever videos. Please subscribe. And then my favorite trip, my favorite place is probably Tokyo. Tokyo is awesome. It's like a clean, safe, polite New York. they've just got a system for everything. It's amazing. And obviously, you know, if you ever get to go for Wrestle Kingdom or something, go, because there's so much stuff. I mean, you know, Tokyo Dome is in this Tokyo City Entertainment Complex, so they've got some theme park rides. They've got a cool roller coaster called Thunder Dolphin, which is an awesome name. That is real, by the way. I did not make that up. Thunder Dolphin.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, I think he's coming in for Chikara soon. Thunder Dolphin.
Well, of course, yeah.
Yeah. But so Tokyo Dome is right there, and it's just like, you know, just a few feet away from Korakuen Hall. So, you know, Korakuen always has shows going. And then, you know, you've got the New Japan store. There's a whole bunch of Japanese wrestling stores right around Tokyo Dome and Tokyo Dome City. Obviously, people want to go to Robert Steakhouse. Killer Khan's restaurant is awesome. There's a lot of just cool things to do in Tokyo, and I love Tokyo Disneyland, and then Tokyo Disney Sea, the sister park, is amazing. So I'm a big fan of Tokyo.
Wow.
What, in all your travels, what food has been the best?
That's a great question. I don't know if I thought of that. You know what's good, since we're talking about Tokyo? Okay. You have to go to Ribera Steakhouse. But one of the things you have to understand is that I think people think steakhouse and they have an image for what a steakhouse is.
Right.
And all of the space in Tokyo is obviously very small. So it's not a very big space. Understand that. And, you know, it's just these wood tables and you're sitting on chairs that just sort of look like stumps. And the steak is very basic. And, you know, you get corn and some rice. It's not anything that's very opulent. I mean, that's how it started. Bruiser Brody was looking for an affordable steak, and that's how it grew. So there's a million wrestling pictures on the wall, and you got to see all of those. But it's nothing that's awe. You know, it's nothing like it's an incredible visual. You have to go. It's great. But I think for an experience, I prefer Killer Khan's restaurant. Killer Khan's restaurant has got really good food. It's a bigger space. He's got awesome merch to buy, and usually he's there, and he's totally cool. So I really like Killer Khan. I really enjoyed the food there and just the whole experience.
Wow. Wow, that's interesting. Speaking of restaurants and wrestlers, have you ever been to Abdullah's place?
No, I didn't get to go.
Okay. I always wondered about his place. And I wonder,
I've had friends that have gone. They say it's, you know, it's just kind of there. I mean, the food is fine. And, like, I remember, like, some friends went one time and he had, you know, his matches or whatever on loop. And I think maybe it was just a tape at that time, or they never upgraded. But I think my friends, I remember, had to ask them to put the tape on or rewind it or whatever, or put it back on somehow. So.
Yeah, our meal's fine, but can you please put the wrestling back on?
Well, yeah. I mean, it draws people.
Do you think that, you know, there are those opportunities to become businessmen? Who do you think has utilized that to the best of their abilities and capitalized on, you know, being a wrestler, and then was able to transform it into a successful entrepreneurship outside of the business?
Oh, Rock. I mean, there's only one name, Rock. I think you make the case that he's the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
And some people go, oh, if he didn't stay in the business long enough. Well, yeah, he outgrew it. Isn't that the point?
Yeah.
The point is to make money, and he made the most money. He had great matches. He main evented. And he got out before he went down, and he just kept growing. I honestly think I would argue with Meltzer himself that that Rock is the greatest of all time, because I think he's drawn more money than, you know, Jim Londos. People talk about him drawing hundreds of thousands of people in his era. I think you argue that he's the greatest of all time. I don't know that you can include it otherwise, unless you say, oh, he got out of wrestling. He grew out of it, so that would make him the greatest.
Do you think that sometimes it, you know, it kind of gets overlooked? I know that, you know, wrestlers, you don't want to consider quote-unquote actors, but at the same time, just recently on the phone call with Cody prior to the pay-per-view, Cody mentioned Howard Fine, and, you know, Howard is an acting coach in LA, and I think that, you know, what some people don't realize is that someone like that, an acting coach, a well-respecting acting coach, could not only influence, you know, wrestlers in terms of the characters and understanding a little bit more, but also in terms of understanding, you know, the aspect of what you're selling in terms of yourself and your product. Is that something that maybe, you know, with all this talk is always about the writers, that could be actually utilized a little bit more and finding, you know, real good coaches to kind of help progress some of the talent that, you know, really have that potential of breaking out and becoming huge stars?
You know, I did a show a couple of weeks ago that got some traction too, where I just said Cody Rhodes is the best wrestler in the world right now.
Yeah.
And the two people who were doing the best work, Cody Rhodes and Chris Jericho, both went to Hollywood and thoroughly studied and learned the acting craft. You know, not saying words with emotions, but being in the moment. Right. Understanding all the things that you're talking about. And that's what makes so much of what they've done so good. Do you guys watch Impact?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
God bless these people. And God bless all of the talent. I'm sure they're not making hardly any money. But if you look at the acting that Jericho and Cody do versus the acting that the talent in Impact find themselves doing, it's like I watch Impact, and I don't want to be insulting, but I'm waiting for the guy with the pizza to show up. I know they're trying. And look, I understand that it's hard, and they'll probably get better, and this is a good place to start. But and they're doing their best. And really, they are. And it's a really tough market. Sometimes I wonder, is this a great time for wrestling, or is this a really hard time for wrestlers because it's so hard to break through, but because of the competition? But I think that if you really want to do wrestling, yes, all of the optics and matches are important, but even more important is the story and to do what Cody and Chris are doing.
Yeah.
And also, you know, if you go WWE, at some point, you know, you're going to get terrible verbiage, or you're going to get, hey, guess what? Bobby Lashley is sleeping with your wife. Go out there and make this work. You know, hey, here's a back office in an arena that we've made to look like a restaurant. Go do a skit. Go ahead. You are going to have to make this garbage work. And sort of like Ric Flair when they played musical chairs, or all the time that Santino was able to pull gold out of the garbage they gave him, your career is going to be on the line, because if it bombs, it's going to be your fault and not the fault of these ridiculous situations that you have been put into. So I would literally start studying acting, whether it's reading books or a coach or getting involved in theater in your community, something. I think it's hugely important.
You know, what's really interesting about that, in thinking of those terms of, you know, certain crappy production values or crappy plots and points, in some ways, it seems like Vince McMahon is actually the Ed Wood of professional wrestling, but was able to turn the shit into shine. And, you know, because if you look at the track record and some of the stuff he puts out there, like, no producer would want to touch that shit. But yet he makes these people do it, and yet his product still sells.
You know, I always thought that the Crockett matches were much more exciting than the WWE matches. The thing is that Vince was able to see what was coming and understand that the decision makers, whether it's someone that runs a network or any sort of platform today, production values matter. And a lot of people want the top brand. They don't want to mess around with the secondary brand. They just want the best. And one of the reasons that people choose the best is production values, that it's bigger and better. I mean, look at, it seems like it's nothing now, but boy, that first Fox show of SmackDown looked amazing. Right. I don't know if it's changed or just I've already been desensitized, but the first time I saw the opening graphics and the set and everything, it really popped with me. But now, I don't know why it doesn't, but it used to. But I mean, look at the NFL and the XFL. Who asked for another league? Who?
So true.
Right.
You know, but people want the top brand, by and large. Sure, there's people who like craft beers. There's a market for that. But I went out with some friends last night. She's like, I just like Budweiser. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. You like Budweiser, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's just, there are a lot of different reasons. I think we've kind of covered this as a whole. There's a lot of different reasons that people watch wrestling. Maybe it's aggression. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the wacky storylines, or their aspirational figures because of the athleticism, or it's a soap opera. Or, you know, maybe it's like me, I'm just addicted and I can't get out anymore. there's a lot of reasons. And Vince, you know, Keith's been doing this a long time. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the things I like to avoid is just, oh, Vince is old or Vince is stupid. Certainly, he, you know, being whatever age affects how you view the world. But it's also, Vince has done this a long time. And he's like, oh, yeah, I've already done this. I don't need to try this again. Or, you know, people have also said that he's distracted or he doesn't feel like the fans are paying as much attention. It's only wrestling. I think there's a lot of reasons for the things that we see and a lot of the disjointed choices that are made, but I don't know it's that he's stupid.
Well, do you think that in some, along those lines, in some fashion, that the fans tend to think that it's more about them, because we are, you know, in human nature, you know, we want to personalize things. We want to think that this is really about us. But in the end, if you create the playground and you're in charge of it, you can do whatever the fuck you want. Screw the other people. as long as that money keeps coming in, it's basically, you know, you're getting full permission to, you know, to mess around with whatever you want to do, because there is always some kind of sponsorship there, someone willing to give you the money because you have established that equity in the brand, that now he can just basically do whatever amuses himself. And, you know, if the fans don't like it, screw the fans. You know, we're just doing this.
Well, I think that the game has changed, you know, where now it's about TV money.
Yeah.
Years past, it was all about, you know, house shows. And now house shows, it's kind of crazy, they're losing money on house shows for the first time ever.
I could not believe
unfathomable. Yeah. And, you know, people look at the ratings because that's what we did during the Monday Night Wars, when really it's probably more about demographics.
Right.
And it's also about international television deals. You know, it's crazy that these Saudi shows make more money for the company than WrestleMania. The game has really changed, and I think sometimes we can get caught up in analysis that maybe not as valid anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually a really good point.
You know, it's going to be interesting. You know, in this day and age, things are really niche. You make a lot of money off of niche things. You know, you see a lot of these YouTubers and influencers. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, it was always frustrating. Old people could never keep up with what was going on. And I'm like, it has to be impossible now. There are just too many platforms and too many things. I mean, I was talking with some friends of mine who were shocked about, and I don't even know her name, but the gamer girl on Twitch that sold out of her bathwater at like $30 a pop or something.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
It's insane that you can make a living just off of a smaller yet passionate audience right now. And this is the question that I've had for a long time with wrestling. There is a battle for that fan that travels for wrestling.
Yeah.
And I wonder what the saturation point is. And I don't know the economics. But I did see that StarCast was offering 50% off for a bunch of meet and greets and tickets this past weekend in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Is that a sign? I don't know, but it could be.
Right. Yes.
At some point, you know, there's limits to everything in this life. And at some point, people are going to only spend so much on wrestling, and it's how much is AEW going to get? How much is WWE going to get, or New Japan World, or anything? It's all going to come down to a very limited pie, and will Ring of Honor drop out? They would tell you no. But you know, it's, you know, how long can Impact stay alive?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe forever. Maybe there'll be something shocking, and someone else will go away based on a executive decision on a TV network or some other platform, but there's limited resources, and at what point do people tap out, or have they already?
Well, what's interesting, too, with AEW being the new brand, and I think this is something that they actually could tap into, and that is if a younger generation latches onto it and sees this as their wrestling, what they like, their product, and then the next generation, their kids, are growing up on an AEW brand, you know, it becomes almost of a sense that is the WWE the old person's wrestling?
You know, I tweeted out something last night during the show. Like, a lot of people have criticized Jim Ross, that he, you know, sometimes he criticizes the product, what he's calling it, or doesn't seem to be as passionate about certain aspects or certain matches. There was the whole issue with Jungle Boy versus calling him Jungle Jack Perry. And kind of like what I said about Vince McMahon, Jim Ross is not stupid.
No.
Yeah.
And given Cody's promo, this was before the main event, the title match, mm-hmm. but given Cody's promo with the generational promo, and also, you know, when Stone Cold Steve Austin hit, one of the driving factors was the frustration of workers and bosses. There was a tangible resentment there that was throughout the culture, and they took advantage of it. And obviously, with the whole OK Boomer thing, I was like, are they going to try to capitalize on that? Now, it doesn't look like they have, or they will, but that was just my question in the moment to see if anyone had any thoughts that I was right or any other anecdotes to where I could be wrong. I was just, I didn't say it was happening. I was like, is this a thing? Because, like I said, JR isn't dumb.
Yeah.
So he's doing it for a reason. And I wonder if that could still be a thing. I've kind of moved past it given what happened between MJF and Cody Rhodes.
Right.
But yeah, you got to wonder if there's wrestling often mimics society from World War II, having the German and Japanese heels for right. generations. You know, Stone Cold Steve Austin, different other aspects, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So that'll be interesting to see. And here's another thing. I like the Young Bucks a lot, and you have to respect what they have done.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If I was them, I right now would try to slowly transition and get the name Young out of my name.
Yes.
Because I've seen it with, you know, when the Legion of Doom first hit in the, you know, when they were in the AWA, they threw Bruiser and Crusher around, and for the first time, those guys looked old to fans.
Right.
New Age Outlaws did it to Legion of Doom and the OLD. And yeah. then, not that long ago, the New Age Outlaws came back, and they were the Ice Age Outlaws.
Yeah.
There's always that turning point. And I just think that it would probably be to their best interest. It's going to happen at some point, but they're still really popular, and I don't want it to happen to them. I don't want to draw attention and cause any problems, not that I would, but you understand what I'm saying? It happens. It's a thing. I would find a way to kind of pivot out of that and do something in that regard before there's a backlash. And that's probably one of the benefits that we haven't talked about with all of these guys being vice presidents, is that they can then, you know, transition out.
Right.
Sort mm-hmm. of like, you know, Jay-Z transitioned out from just being, you know, a rapper and into management and into owning things. Same thing with Dre. You know, a lot of these people moved on and moved on to the next stage in their life. So yeah, when Nick and Matt lose their hair, they can then be management, hopefully, and just move on to another stage where, you know, the optics won't necessarily matter.
Without a doubt, man. You bring up an excellent point with that as well. I think that was something that has been the elephant in the room for a lot of us that have watched the Young Bucks on the indies, and now as everything segues in with AEW, it's something that a lot of people they've had in the back of their minds, but they haven't had the heart to say it necessarily. But yeah, I agree 1,000,000% that they need to start segueing and change up the tag team name a bit, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons that Meryl Streep still gets roles, because she never positioned herself to put focus on her looks and her body.
Yeah.
You know, when anytime there's an act who is a sex symbol, you've probably got, you know, a limited shelf life.
Yeah.
You know, Pam Anderson, I guess, is now some sort of anti-porn crusader. And it's like, well, you know, you kind of benefited off of everything.
Right.
That's what happens. I mean, you never see a young actress who's hot in Hollywood go, you know, we need more parts for older actresses, because it's just not in their best interest. It's only when someone realizes, oh, wait, I'm not the hot actress at the moment, where suddenly it matters that they're getting parts for, and it is an issue. I'm just saying that maybe everyone should advocate for it, whether it's in your best interest or not.
without a doubt, man. So, Jim, as we start to wind down, we've got a segment that we like to do here on the show. Long story short, it's going to be a bit of word association. You don't have to confine it to just one word for each of the names, but I'm going to read a list of names to you. I just want for you to say the first thing that popped into your head about any of these guys, or ladies, actually. And we're going to be doing this for 70 seconds, okay?
All right.
Are you ready, sir?
I hope so.
All right, let's go.
Sin City Steve, 70 Deadly Seconds starts now.
Dave Meltzer.
The best. Honest man. Like him a lot.
Brian Alvarez.
Smarter than you realize. He's a radio fan who got radio. One of the few I've ever seen. Maybe the only one in my life. I think a lot of the things he does on his podcast are overlooked. He's really smart.
Pat McNeil.
Great guy, very honest, straightforward, good guy, like him a lot.
Wade Keller.
Really smart businessman, a great entrepreneur. A lot of times when people think liberal, they don't think entrepreneur, and Wade is both. I think he lives a very straightforward lifestyle with his values, but at the same time is able to, the same way, make money as an entrepreneur. I respect that.
Tony Khan.
I don't know enough. I hope it all works out. I really do, and I hope this sticks with it. I don't know enough about him to have a good comment. I'm sorry there.
No, and last but certainly not least, Cody Rhodes.
The best wrestler in the world, at least until Wednesday.
Awesome, Jim. So thank you for participating in the 70 Deadly Seconds.
Awesome.
See, I feel like this is why I couldn't have won on Family Feud.
That is so awesome. Jim, man, thanks for hanging out with us, man. We appreciate it. Is there anything you want to promote out there so people can take a listen to?
Yeah, I'm on The Observer, which is crazy. I didn't even know how this happened, but it did. And, obviously I do Wrestling Observer Live, and I really appreciate that, and I appreciate all the response that I've been getting. It's very nice because I'm so fragile, so I appreciate that. And the other thing is, everyone knows Pacific Rim, and that's awesome, but I also do the Portland WrestleCast, growing up watching Portland, so I try to tell a lot of the stories. And one of the things that I like about wrestling is I just live this regular life, and all of the carny, crazy stories that all of the old wrestlers, it's kind of amazing to me. So a lot of people didn't know Portland, so I kind of tell the story of what was happening on camera and in the territory, and then we'll go to someone who was there and kind of get the backstage perspective and explain all of the characters of wrestling. Like Elton Owen, Don Owen's brother, ran another town, and he would pay the boys to shoot in matches. Mm-hmm. Like the first couple of minutes of their supposed work match in front of the fans was supposed to be a shoot, and he would watch it and give the winner like $15 and the loser like $10. And eventually the boys would just work the match, work the fake shoot, and just split the money. So it's just crazy stories like that happened in Portland that I just like to talk about. So it's a fun look back. So even if you don't know anything about Portland, it's real easy to jump into. I try to keep it around an hour, 45 minutes, so it doesn't take up too much of your time. But I think it's a fun listen. Yeah. And then again, my wife, we travel a lot. We do a podcast called The Best Trip Ever. You can find it pretty much everywhere. Mm-hmm. But we also have YouTube videos, so we'll do like audio, and then we'll all convert it with video and pictures to a YouTube video. You can find that at Jim Valley. It's under Best Trip Ever. So if you could subscribe to that, that would probably be the biggest help. And thank you. So that would be awesome.
Awesome. Appreciate it.
I do Pat McNeil. Pat McNeil and I do Way Back Playback. We've been doing it for a really long time. It's like Mr. Sang, Theater 3000 for wrestling. We tell stories. We make jokes. We talk about the matches. Get everything out of it. But yeah, Way Back Playback, Real Pat McNeil on Twitter. And that's you can follow that.
That's awesome, Jim. We want to have you back sometime in the future, man. You promise to come back?
Absolutely. No, this has been super fun.
Awesome. All right, we appreciate it. Jim Valley.
Vegas.
Bad Boys of Podcasting, holding you down since day one.
January 2019.
The hottest podcast in the universe.
There's like 1,000 podcasts.
Vegas Bad Boys, day one. Say.
Different. Thoughts. Outrageous.
Interview.
Exciting.
Interesting.
Intriguing.
Amazing.
Funny. Intergalactic.
Bad Boys.
If you haven't listened to all of our podcasts, take a listen of what you might have missed. JTG.
Shad and I. Shad was the big guy. Is it the same size? One is a little bit fatter, right?
Yeah.
One is cut. Yeah. One is kind of like pudgy.
Yeah, that's Angelo. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's kind of similar to me, Shad. Yeah, I'm kind of like the...
Ow, Snow.
Well, yeah, I did. I actually wrote a book. I also, just so you guys know, I do magic for the blind.
Wow.
That's my way of giving back to the community, you know. It's, let me tell you. It's like, is this your card? And it's like, I don't know. And you're like, it is. Ta-da. And
I'm
like, oh, my God.
Jeff Cobb.
You know, I don't plan to wrestle in my late 40s or 50s or 60s or 70s. Like, you know. But, you know, again, I say that now, but...
Right.
it's like the weirdest addiction ever, you know? Like,
yeah, we know. B. Brian Blair.
All of a sudden, I look in the mirror, and Terry's, you know, spanking his woody on top of the back of Coco's ass. With his pants ripped, and I'm going, oh my gosh, man, we're going to prison.
Vicky Guerrero.
You know, you are definitely, in our minds, a Hall of Famer, because...
I'll give you $5 later, guys.
Theo Landers.
How do you guys do this? Are you guys in like a recording studio, or are you guys in a home studio?
Hey, you don't contact WWE Creative and ask them how they write Raw, do you?
We're
all in a bathroom.
We're in a right bathroom. Yeah, we're in a bathhouse. We're
in a bathtub.
You're in a bathhouse.
Yeah.
RVD.
If I hit a squirrel with my car, it would totally ruin my day. I mean, I was like, I'd get out of the car and I'd try to save it, you know. And
Selena De La Renta.
When you say Selena at work, Selena in real life, it's about the same. It's just preparation for my everyday life. It's about the same, my preparation for MLW. The only thing is I need twice the amount of makeup and probably tighter dresses. But
Nick Aldis.
I do love Vegas, and you know what's funny is that, like, the first time I went was actually for TNA when I debuted at the Main Event Mafia. I'd never been to Vegas before then.
Wow.
But in many ways, it's really the showbiz capital of America.
Yep.
You know, like, there's so much show business going on there all the time. I just love that vibe.
Vegas Bad Boys, a podcast, has over 50 interviews, and they keep on coming. Make sure you subscribe. Keep listening. Write a review about our podcast. Come to our live event. Participate in our contest. Like our social media. And most importantly, tell all your family and friends about us. We're Vegas born, and we are Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.